Good morning. It all started out so well, didn't it? 2 years ago, Theresa May, Arlene Foster watched on as £1 billion of a deal was struck between their two parties in London. Fast forward to yesterday, and it's all starting to unravel. The DUP are not happy as details of the EU backstop plans started to emerge in Brussels. The DUP now threatening Theresa May. Sammy Wilson doing some of that. The BBC's political editor, Mark Devenport, with us this morning. So how bad a fallout is it, Mark, between the DUP and Theresa May?
Well, I don't think you can underestimate it, Stephen. It's now very much an open shouting match rather than all those supposedly cosy behind closed doors meetings that they were having. And that's because the DUP is obviously fearful that they believe that Theresa May and the officials close to her, like Ollie Robbins, who's been negotiating with the EU, see the most feasible compromise as being some kind of enhancement of the regulatory checks that happen already between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. Now, they might see this as just a technical matter, moving from just animals to wider food products or whatever, but the DUP see it as very much a political, constitutional matter that if Northern Ireland was stuck under this plan in a different regulatory zone from the rest of the UK, that will be a kind of a, not even a thin end of the wedge, quite a thick end of the wedge in terms of breaking up the UK.
But of course, as we were saying on this show yesterday, and I'm sure elsewhere, these regulatory checks already are different than the rest of the UK.
Yeah, I mean, there are good common sense reasons why Ireland is treated as one unit for circumstances of animal health and also plant health. So you're basically talking about checks to ensure things like foot and mouth, BSE, don't come into Ireland from Great Britain. Also in order to prevent against pests, crop diseases. And there's been a general recognition that that's entirely commonsensical. I think where the DUP are concerned, I mean, there's a bit of debate about lasagna and how much lasagna is or isn't moving between these islands. But they'd be concerned about, suddenly widening out these checks, for instance, to all food products, and starting to affect things like the containers coming over on lorries from the likes of the multiple supermarkets, the Asdas, the Tescos, the Sainsbury's and so on.
So has anybody nailed the mark on what they thought would happen when they advocated Brexit?
It's a big question, really, because at the moment what you've got is you've essentially got the DUP, the likes of Sammy Wilson, banging this gong and saying Michel Barnier is posing a threat to the union, whereas I think the likes of Mike Nesbitt, the Ulster Unionist leader, John Major, Tony Blair, the former Prime Ministers, they will be within their rights to say, hang on, back in the 2016 referendum campaign, we said that Brexit would threaten the stability of the UK. We told you so. So it's a fair debate to be had right now as to whether the DUP and the other unionists who campaigned for Brexit, really thought this through.
And meanwhile, while Arlene Foster is trying to stand up to Theresa May, how secure is she, Mark, in her own position, in her own party?
Well, we do know, obviously, for some time, because of all the pressure that she's been under in terms of the Stormont deadlock and the RHI inquiry, and some of the members of her party thinking, could she have handled things better back then, that there is that sense of pressure amongst some of them. And some may think, if somebody else was the leader, would we be in this pickle? At the same time, the DUP is the sort of party that rallies round. And when Sinn Féin put down that condition, which they've since qualified, about not sharing power with Arlene Foster, the DUP's gut instinct was to say, you won't tell us who our leader is. So they are having a meeting, I think, today, somewhere in the mid-Ulster area. There's been speculation it's about the leadership. I suspect it'll be more about the wider situation. And because the DUP tends to double down when they're put under pressure, and because right now they're in a tough spot in relation to Brexit, I think certainly in the short term, her position is almost strengthened. They won't want to be seen to be divided within their own ranks or putting pressure on their leader when they're trying to put pressure on Theresa May.
Are you hearing any noises of people readying themselves for the leadership, positioning themselves?
I think there are probably some figures who think, well, should Arlene Foster find another niche, go off to Westminster or whatever, I might be, not me, but talking about some figures within the party might consider themselves more able to unite unionism.
Would Sammy want the job? Geoffrey Donaldson want the job? Any of those two?
Sammy Wilson obviously made no secret of the fact that he wanted the job when Peter Robinson more or less froze him out of the whole game and sorted out things for Arlene. And obviously things have changed a bit because Peter Robinson's now come out with statements in which he's different from both the DUP leadership line, and Sammy has been quite happy in recent months to take him on publicly over, for instance, the border poll. So Sammy Wilson, I think, made it clear previously that he wanted the job. I do know that my colleagues on The View put it to him about the leadership, and he gave a firm public pledge of loyalty to Arlene Foster.
Let's actually hear what Sammy Wilson said to Mark Crothers. This is last night.
No, we're not bluffing. This is far too important an issue to bluff, Mark, because this is what will come from these negotiations, and if the government gives in to what the EU are demanding, will in effect leave Northern Ireland as an outpost of the EU and an outcast from the rest of the United Kingdom. And I mean, that's how serious this issue is, and we're not bluffing on it. We will not accept, and we've said this time and time again, we will not accept an arrangement which the EU and the Irish government are demanding, that Northern Ireland be kept within the EU while the rest of the United Kingdom leaves.
This is a game of chicken, is it, between the DUP and the Conservative Party? And if you do not get a deal that you can sign up to, you are prepared to vote against the government in the budget and run the risk of forcing, potentially, Theresa May out of number 10, or indeed a general election which could see a Conservative come back with a majority and you with no influence, or Jeremy Corbyn in number 10.
Well, first of all, let's not trivialise this. This is not a game. This is a very, very serious issue, and it couldn't be more serious because, of course, what happens in Northern Ireland could also have implications for Scotland and for the United Kingdom as a whole. So it's not a game we're playing. And secondly, it is our hope that we will never have to carry out the threat which we have said may be necessary. And thirdly,
but if you have
course,
to, you will. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, yes. And thirdly, of course, just to clarify matters, voting against the budget does not necessarily mean that you would move to a general election, because, of course, we operate under fixed-term parliaments. If the government loses a vote on a particular piece of policy, then, of course, the next step we would have a vote of confidence. And we have made it quite clear that our job is not, and our aim is not to bring the government down. Our aim is simply to turn the government round, to do what it promised it would do, that is to ensure that Brexit is delivered in a way which affects the whole of the United Kingdom, not just parts of it.
There are some people who think that maybe you'd be an awful lot happier if Boris Johnson was in number 10. Is that what this is about? Do you think Theresa May has had her chance, she's let you down, and maybe it's time for somebody else to have a go?
No, and we wouldn't be as arrogant to suggest who should lead the Conservative Party. But whether it's Theresa May or somebody else, it's nothing to do with us, and indeed we'd be very arrogant. We wouldn't let the Conservative Party tell us who should lead our party, and I think that it would be darn cheeky of us to try and tell them who should lead theirs.
Well, he says that, Mark, but he deliberately, with Mark Crothers, put forward the proposition that it wouldn't necessarily bring the government down. So he was putting it up to Theresa May that she might lose her job.
Yes, and I think, you know, there's no secret really to the fact that the DUP obviously has quite close relationships with some of the Tory Brexiteers, and they've chatted to them in the margins of the Conservative conference. And, you know, I think that they feel that they've got a strong hand to play, because it's not necessarily as simple, as Sammy Wilson was saying, as Theresa May or Jeremy Corbyn. Because of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, it could be that Theresa May may have to stand down, may have to face some kind of internal struggle for the leadership. Now, it's not clear who would win. Theresa May's supporters say that Boris Johnson hasn't got the votes, and that, you know, maybe some other kind of compromise person would come forward. So I think that they feel that they have some cards to play, because there's always that possibility of just removing the Conservative leadership rather than bringing down the whole government.
Mark, the money that we were promised in Northern Ireland from the confidence and supply deal, how much was it? A billion from memory or over
a
billion?
Yeah, it was a billion, or it went up to, I think it was 1.5 if you took into account extra flexibility for money that had been promised otherwise.
Have we got it all yet?
No, I don't think we have got it all, in as much as we have got some tranches that went towards alleviating, for instance, hospital waiting lists and various other payments that did come through, but there's still quite a lot of money that was earmarked, for instance, for infrastructure projects like ultra-fast broadband that was meant to be being rolled out, and that has been stuck in the system, partly because of this whole business of people not being able to make ministerial decisions up at Stormont. So it could be that the Treasury will put its hand down the back of the Stormont sofa and drag it back.
What? Drag it back?
Well, it's... You know, the way it works is I don't think it has actually been physically given over. It's been promised. So in a way, it may be just that the promise could be ripped up. But then...
And if the DUP fell out with Theresa May, is that deal gone?
Well, the DUP would make the point that their arrangement wasn't being between Theresa May and Arlene Foster. It was an arrangement between the Conservative Party and the Democratic Unionist Party. So... If there was, for instance, a new leader, a Boris or whoever, they would say, look, you still have to keep to this deal. And no doubt the new leader would want to, because the arithmetic at Westminster would still remain tight. Obviously, all bets would probably be off if we were in a situation of going to a general election.
And just finally, Mark, we didn't hear it in that clip, but Sammy Wilson pledged his allegiance to Arlene Foster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Has Jeffrey...
Well, I don't know if he's been asked recently.
I think we should ask him.
Yeah, you maybe should.
I think we should maybe give Jeffrey a wee call. Let's do that. Why don't we give Jeffrey Donsell a call and ask him if he has full confidence in Arlene Foster continuing as leader? Will we do that?
Yeah, although I suspect right now he'll probably say absolutely.
Let's see if he does. Thanks a lot, Mark. Thank you. Morning to you. Claire Hannah joining us now from the SDLP. Good morning to you, Claire.
Good morning.
Morning. And Frank Shivers from the Northern Conservatives. Good morning to you, Frank.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, Claire.
Good morning. Good morning. So, Claire, where are we? Do you really think that the DUP are bluffing here? They've got leverage over the Tory party and Theresa May doesn't want to lose her gig.
Well, the fact is there have only ever been three options flowing from the Brexit decision. And as Mark Davenport lined out there, that the DUP were warned about this. You can either not Brexit, or everybody can stay in the single market, or there has to be checks in the Irish Sea. And it isn't a constitutional issue. Only the Good Friday Agreement can change the constitution, the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. But it's classic DUP hypocrisy to say that checks north-south would be absolutely fine and manageable, and the checks east-west wouldn't, particularly as, again, Mark Davenport laid out there, the island of Ireland is already treated as one for a lot of these checks around.
This would be a lot more checks, wouldn't it? This would magnify the amount of checks, the type of checks, big time, Claire. And you know it.
Yeah, yes, but remember that all of these decisions flow from the Brexit that the DUP campaigned for, that the DUP funded, that the DUP have cheerleaded for 2 years. And they have to accept the reality of that, and that Brexit has consequences, and it is always going to be a trade-off. You can't have all of your cake and eat all of your cake. So this has always been...
But let's be very, very clear. Let's be very clear so that the people know what we're talking about here. At the moment, because you're trying to lay this out, well, there are already checks. There are checks on live animal stock. This would extend the checks beyond live animal stock into products that are derived from animal stock. So that's where you get your lasagna and your beef burgers and all of that malarkey.
Absolutely. I'd be very clear. Yes, there are additional checks. Yes, there will be additional regulatory burdens. But I would agree with the view of a number of business leaders, including on the BBC last night, who said that this is infinitely preferable to a no deal or to any checks going across the island. Because, yes, it is this... Their Brexit is increasing red tape. I'm not denying that in any way, but it is far, far more manageable than a no deal. And again, it is an inevitable consequence of the Brexit that the DUP have insisted on. And the extremely extremely narrow interpretation of the Brexit referendum of 2 years ago. So this is the point. It has consequences, but the business community, and I must say very courageously, because previously when business leaders have spoken out in this, they've been they've effectively been kind of browbeaten and accused of you know, supporting some nationalist agenda. But they have been very clear that this is far more manageable. It is building on existing checks. And in fact, the EU has been remarkably flexible. I don't think anybody thought that the EU would be quite as flexible as this in terms of saying that potentially a lot of these checks could happen off the border and elsewhere in the supply chain. But this is the only practical way to do it. And these are all consequences of the DUP's campaigning.
Frank?
Firstly, I would say, Stephen, it's great that Clare has eventually come to the realisation that, the Brexit's going to happen and we're going to come out of the EU. That's great to hear. Unfortunately, what we're seeing, I think, is the typical DUP negotiations. It's either the DUP way or no way. And I really do think that they're playing a very dangerous game. And I think they need to be careful how they're playing it.
Why? They've got the clout.
Yes, they do have the clout at the moment. But, I mean, if they're doing what... If they say or follow through what they say they're going to do, potentially they could force a general election.
Well, Sammy Wilson has made it clear, of course, under the fixed-term Parliament rules, that that's not necessarily... It could be a change of leader, not a general election.
Well, the likelihood is that, you know, if there's a vote of no confidence in the leader, then, you know, it will move to a general election. But even if it was just a vote for the leader, I mean, the process of voting a new leader into the Conservative Party takes longer than the actual Brexit, when we actually physically press the button on Brexit. So that even a leadership, a launch of a leadership election won't inhibit the Brexit date.
Why should people care about this in Northern Ireland, Frank? How are their lives going to be affected?
Care about the Brexit or
all of this political infighting? You know, people get up in the morning, they're going to their work. You know, they're concerned about paying their bills at the end of the day, getting their kids to school, getting back home safely, looking after the house. Meanwhile, all these politicians issuing threats to each other. Why should anybody care?
Well, I think we should all care. Even on a monetary side of things, the $1.5 billion that has been promised for the confidence supply agreement, which I have to say the DUP, if they ask for it, would do it tongue-in-cheek, because they're not giving a supply with votes and whatnot at the present, or they're voting. They're saying they're not going to give that support and confidence. But if we had a sitting storm, you know, that $1.5 billion could have been injected into Northern Ireland to help on our education system, our housing, our infrastructure. And because of a lack of storming, that hasn't been carried through. Now, the Brexit side of things is even more important in that, you know, where do we go if we don't have deals with various parties, south, north, wherever throughout the world? We're going to be in an even bigger economic disaster coming down the line.
Well, here's the doomsday merchant now. If we don't have deals, of course we're going to get deals sorted. You don't think that both the DUP and the government of this country are just going to sit by and have no deals in place?
Well, let me put it another way. Stephen.
Stop your scare tactics.
Sorry, if you lost your job tomorrow and you didn't get a job for another 12 months, okay, could you last the 12 months? You would want to get a job as quick as possible, and we want to get agreements with trading agreements, free trade agreements with countries as soon as possible. We don't want to wait 12 months. We don't want to, you know, we want to do it as soon as we can.
Claire?
That makes economic sense.
Frank, I assume then your senior party colleagues were lying when before the referendum they said this would be the easiest thing in the world. I think Liam Fox said he'd have trade deals done by tea time on the first day. We already have, as members of the EU, trade deals with two-thirds of the planet. Can you just, day one, tell me about the trade deals that we should be chasing that we don't already have, and what preferential
You know as well as me, there was promises, exaggerated promises. I wouldn't maybe go as far as lies, because I think possibly both sides believed the exaggerations that they were telling on both sides. So, you know, I don't think it's right that you would point out just one side of the argument.
Hang on. I think it's materially very important. People voted for Brexit on the basis that your party, senior members of your party, for a start, told them, many of them told them they could stay in the single market, but senior members of your party said this would be the easiest thing in the world and that the world would be queuing up to trade with us. And that is not the case in any way, shape or form. And I want to come back on two other things.
The Remainers said that we were going to go into economic doom and gloom. We're going to have mass unemployment. The Bank of England would collapse.
Are you conceding, Frank, that your party exaggerated to people in order to get them to vote Leave?
I think, firstly, it needs to be... I'm not a government spokesperson. I'm a party member. I'm unelected. So I'm talking on a personal basis here. I think that on both sides, there was exaggerations in relation to selling the argument.
And to answer Claire's point, can you name one deal that we don't already have that you'll be going out and getting?
Not off the top of my head. I can't.
What's that tell you?
All of this.
But I'm going to tell you, we have now countries. Sorry, we do now have countries that we can talk to that previously we couldn't talk to under the EU, and we can do deals with various companies coming in relation to the tax side of things.
Here we are, nearly 2 years on, and you can't tell us off the top of your head any of these countries we'd talk to what we'd be saying to them.
Well, there's a number of things. I mean, that's all in negotiation as well, Stephen. And I think you're right. I think you're right. After 2 years, we should have a lot more clarity, and that's regretful. However, the DUP, and what we're here to talk about is the DUP stance at the moment, is clearly not helpful in moving that forward.
Stephen, I just want to make two points. Firstly, the DUP's confidence and supply magic bean deal with all this money that they heralded at the start that we haven't seen. Fair to say some of that will probably be allocated in the budget that they're threatening to vote against. But Frank previously said that at least we've now accepted that there will be a Brexit. I think it is entirely unclear how there'll be any majority for any form of Brexit in Westminster. And I think the likelihood of it being put back to people, because as I've said before, the will of the people didn't end one day, 2 summers ago. I think it's very likely. So I would look forward to Frank campaigning again, and hopefully at that point he'll be able to name a single country he needs to deal with. He wants to strike a deal with.
03030 80 55 55. Here's Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hello there, Stephen.
Go ahead, Dan.
Stephen, you said earlier on that some Conservative or Unionist parties reckon that Brexit would be a threat to the Union. But the threat that Mr. Barnier has put to the Union by demanding that Northern Ireland remain within the customs union, that has never, ever been asked in the history of the World Trade Organization. There's no precedent for a larger country asking a smaller country to cede part of its sovereign territory into the customs union of the larger party to facilitate...
But no sovereign territory is being conceded.
Pardon?
No sovereign territory is being conceded.
The customs detail in that part of the service of that part of the sovereign territory will be ceded to the European Union, not the country, not the physical landmass. But so the demand is inherently dramatic, it's controversial, and so it can't be de-dramatised.
Dan, thank you. 03030.
Can I just make one more point about checks on foodstuffs and animals? In Northern Ireland, we have 3,000 cattle stolen from farms every year. Now, that's stolen, not smuggled. That is, those cattle may have been... may have failed a TB test and could be carrying TB, and there's a requisite number stolen in the south. Now, those cattle, they gravitate towards the border, so the biggest threat to contaminated food products actually generates within Northern Ireland. So if you put the border on the Irish Sea, who's going to protect the people of Northern Ireland? Because... anybody with their right mind would tell you that if the trouble's at the border, that's where the checks need to be.
Okay, Dan, thank you very much. The political commentator, Alex Cain, joining us this morning. Alex, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. We were talking about the the political reality for the DUP at the moment. RHI putting pressure, according to some, on the DUP. All their dirty linen has been washed in public. How much pressure do you think Arlene Foster is under, Alex, to keep her job?
I think she's under huge pressure at the moment, Stephen. First one, it goes back to the 2017 Assembly election, let's say, when unionists lost their overall majority in the Assembly for the first time ever. Happened under her watch. The DUP fell below 30, lost a petition of concern, automatic right of veto. That was damaging. They sort of got over that because of the general election, which put them in a pivotal position, propping up the government. That gave her some leeway. Then along came RHI every single day. Very embarrassing stuff for her, for the DUP, for the SPAS, for governance, their whole reputation of being good at government. All that, you know, basically been turned to confetti in the past few months. Hugely damaging. If now it turns out that they have been let down by Theresa May, or that they're about to be let down by Theresa May, or that there's something very bad is coming down the line from Theresa May, I think her position, I don't want to over-egg it, Stephen, I think it becomes untenable, because that is three huge whammies. Two of those in normal circumstances would normally have toppled any leader. So she's been lucky in one sense to have survived. If she doesn't get it right in Brexit, if she has to try and explain why all the confidence they had in Theresa May and all the, oh, we'll do this, with, if all that meant nothing, if she has been let down by a so-called unionist prime minister, that's enormously difficult for her. It's also enormously difficult for the party, and by extension, Stephen, hugely difficult for unionism right across Northern Ireland.
And do you get a sense, Alex, that anybody is readying themselves, either he or she, readying themselves for Arlene's gig?
I know, because I've talked to some people, I know for definite that her leadership has been discussed. My understanding, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when it, I wouldn't say it reached fever pitch, but certainly it was becoming an issue of more open conversation than any leader. In fact, you have to go back to Paisley in 2007, 2008, when he was quietly shuffled off the scene. I haven't heard as much internal angst from the DUP about the leadership since then. They wanted a soft landing for her, maybe see if there was some other out for her. I don't know, there's a sense now that maybe you wait, if Brexit is bad, she'd probably have to fall on her own sword anyway. The other problem they have to
You
face,
say that you know for definite the I leadership definite. Has been discussed within, by whom? Within senior ranks of the party? Is that what you're saying or what?
People whom I would describe as senior members of the Democratic Unionist Party have been discussing it about.
Between themselves, or has there been a meeting at the top, or what's your understanding?
No, there hasn't been a formal meeting. It's being discussed. It's been discussed for a number of reasons, Stephen. It's partly that they're looking forward to what happens if the RHI report, which will come out in a few months' time, if it's particularly bad, because they have this problem. They don't want a deal done, you know, in the sense that if one was even possible between Sinn Féin and the DUP, and then 4, 5, 6, 7 months down the line, terrible RHI report, a lot of blame led in her, it's difficult for her, whatever it is, and we're back to this whole thing, oh, you must step aside, or will you go down? I think...
Well, we shouldn't preempt the RHI conclusion.
I think that's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to preempt it. I'm simply saying that in politics, Stephen, you always look 6 months down the line. You look for the bear pits. You look for the traps. You look for the problem. I'm simply telling you that senior figures in the DUP are already discussing what it's going to look like 6 months away. They're also looking at what it might be if Brexit, because only in the past 2-3 months they've begun to sense that maybe Theresa May is not going to be as friendly or as useful to them as they thought she was. So again, Stephen, they have to sit down and look at this and think, well, what happens if we don't get this? What happens if Brexit does go wrong? What happens to the Conservative deal? Who's going to get the blame? Does it go to the leader? Do we collectively take it? Do we just blame Theresa May and hope that Boris Johnson will come in and rescue us? Although I don't think Boris Johnson has done the numbers to rescue them at any point. So that's what they're thinking. And it's normal, Stephen. That's what parties do. They discuss the huge problems. And so the DUP, I say they're whopping problems. These are not just little things you can fudge away with a bit of, you know, moving this, moving that, shifting the furniture. These are huge.
But there are conversations about more than just Arlene, Alex, at the top of the DUP. You know, Timothy Johnson, who has been a central figure for the DUP, he's currently the DUP's chief executive. He was formerly a senior special advisor within the DUP. He has been brought into the public consciousness because of RHI too, and the RHI inquiry will no doubt draw whatever conclusions about Mr. Johnson as well.
Absolutely, the whole spad thing has been. People, most of you, well, you and I would know the names. Most 99% of people wouldn't know who these are. I know who they are. I know the amount of influence they have with the party. It's hugely embarrassing for the DUP. And depending on what the report says, Stephen, if it looks damaging in 4, 5, 6 months' time, the party then has to make the calculation. Where do you make the sacrifices? Is it at the very top with the leaders? You go a little bit further down, get rid of some spad. However you cut that, Stephen, doesn't matter if. It's going to be hugely, hugely difficult for the DUP when that report comes out.
Do you think we could see a different DUP in the future, say in a year's time, a party that functions fundamentally differently than it has in the past?
I think one thing will change, because I certainly know DUP MLAs have told me this privately. They were shocked. They knew that the spad, and they didn't object to it in one sense, because these are bright kids, the Timothy Johnsons, the Crawfords, and whatever you may think of what's happened over our say, these are bright, intelligent, articulate people. And there was a sense among MLAs, you leave it to them, you let it get on. These are the boys with the first-class degrees. These are the people who know how to write and think and talk and negotiate. You left it to them. I think the shock for many DUP MLAs, and for councillors as well, let's not forget, Stephen, is the sense that the party itself, it wasn't the officers and leadership necessarily who controlled the DUP. It was an unaccountable lower level of maybe 8, 9, 10 people. I think that will never happen again. I think no matter what happens now, whether RHI is good, bad, middling, whatever, I think that culture of a very small group of people controlling the party, you know, who are unelected, I think that has gone.
Okay.
I think, and also, I think it's important as well, they have been embarrassed. DUP MLAs have told me they have been embarrassed by just how incompetent they looked. They, and it's not that they think that everybody else is brilliant in government. It's just in this case, the incompetence has been put on their doorstep and they don't like it.
Alex Cain, thank you very much indeed. Of course, some of the special advisers would argue very strongly that all they were doing, the clues in the title, was advising, and ultimately it is the ministers and the party leader who have the power. But that's all up for discussion. Let's see what Sir Patrick Coughlin and his team conclude about that.